saw the king of the Gandharvas enjoying the company of the Apsaras, she was captivated, and she slightly desired to associate with him. Because of this sinful desire, she was punished by her husband. Parashuram killed his mother and brothers, but later, by dint of the austerities of Jamadagni, they were revived. The sons of Kartavirya Arjuna, however, remembering the death of their father, wanted to take revenge against Parashuram, and therefore, when Parashuram was absent from the ashram, they killed Jamadagni, who was meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Parashuram returned to the ashram and saw his father killed, he was very sorry, and after asking his brothers to take care of the dead body, he went out with determination to kill all the Kshatriyas on the surface of the world. Taking up his axe, he went to Mahishmatipura, the capital of Kartavirya Arjuna, and killed all of Kartavirya Arjuna's sons, whose blood became a great river. Parashuram, however, was not satisfied with killing only the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna. Later, when the Kshatriyas became disturbing, he killed them 21 times so that there were no Kshatriyas on the planet of the earth. Thereafter, Parashuram joined the head of his father to the dead body and performed various sacrifices to please the Supreme Lord. Thus, Jamadagni got life again in his body, and later he was promoted to the higher planetary systems known as Saptarshi Mandala. Parashuram, the son of Jamadagni, still lives in Mahendra Parvata. In the next Manvantara, he will become a preacher of Vedic knowledge. In the dynasty of Gaudi, the most powerful Vishvamitra took birth. By dint of his austerities and penance, he became a Brahmana. He had 101 sons who were celebrated as the Maruchandas. In the sacrificial arena of Harishchandra, the son of Ajigartha, named Sanashnepa, was meant to be sacrificed, but by the mercy of the Prajapatis, he was released. Thereafter, he became Devaratta in the dynasty of Gaudi. The 50th elder son of Vishvamitra, however, did not accept Sanashnepa as the elder brother, and therefore Vishvamitra cursed him to become lechas, unfaithful to the Vedic civilization. Vishvamitra's 51st son, along with the younger brothers, then accepted Sunashepa as their eldest brother, and their father, Vishvamitra, being satisfied, blessed them. Thus, Devaratta was accepted in the dynasty of Kushika, and consequently, there are different divisions in that dynasty. So that's what we have to look forward to over the next few days. We have a series of verses here with no purport, so I'm just going to read through them until we get to verse 8, which is the final verse of today, which also has no purport. There's a couple in between there. Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear Maharaj Parikit, son of the Kuru dynasty, when Lord Parashuram was given this order by his father, he immediately agreed, saying, 'Let it be so.' For one complete year, he traveled to the holy places. Then he returned to his father's residence." Actually, I've made a few notes here, verse by verse, so let's just chant this first verse, since none of these have any particular purport except verse 7, and I'm ending on verse 8, or verse 6, and I'm ending on verse 8. So put verse 1 on the board, we'll chant that one top of the chapter. Sisuko vacha tripro pitro pashi kshito ramas tateti kuru nandana sambatsaram tita yatram charit vashamam charit vasha ramam charit vash ramam dvarajat Sri Sukubacha Pitro Pashikshito Ramas Tateti Kuru Nandana Sambatsaram Tita Yatram Shairit Vashramam Avrajat Sri Sukubacha Pitrupashikshato Ramas Ateti Kurunandana Sambatsaram Tita Yatram Chairit Vashrama Marvajat. Please chant. Sisubhuvacha Matajis. Gopal, you want to chant also? Gopal's proxy. Alright, so Sri Sukha Huvacha, Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Pitra, by his father, Upashikshita, thus advised, Rama, Lord Parashurama, Tathaiti, let it be so, Kuru Nandana, O son of the Kuru dynasty, Maharaj Parikit. Sambatsaram, for one complete year. Tirthayatram, traveling to all the holy places. Charitva, after executing. Ashram, to his own residence. Avrajat, returned. Translation, Sukadev Goswami said, My dear Maharaj Parikit, son of the Kuru dynasty, when Lord Parashuram was given this order by his father, he immediately agreed, saying, Let it be so. For one complete year he traveled to holy places, then he returned to his father's residence. Please repeat. Sukadev Goswami said, My dear Maharaj Parikit, son of the Kuru dynasty, when Lord Parashuram was given the order by his father, he immediately agreed, saying, Let it be so. For one complete year, he traveled to the holy places. Then he returned to his father's residence. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Shaksuhan Militaminatas, my Sri Guru Vedamaha. Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumam Jayati Agirin, Yakripatamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarina. Jayasi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasidhi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpa Tirubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vahivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. My knowledge is meager, my realization is nil, my devotion is insignificant. These things make me unqualified to speak. But one thing I know, I have faith. Faith in the association of the Vaishnavas, the Sadhus, and the Bhaktas. By their association, all these other items will come to be. So at the conclusion of the chapter prior to this and yesterday's verse, and then continuing on into the opening verse of this particular chapter, there's indication about the service to the holy Dham. And this is a very, very nice thing that's been mentioned. Aside from the fact in the previous verse, Lord Parashuram has been encouraged that just by traveling to all the holy Dhams and serving the holy Dhams, service means worship, and worshiping the holy Dhams, you can become alleviated from this horrible sin you've committed. So I was thinking yesterday as I was listening to Trivikram give a class and read that verse, how nice that is, that this is an encouragement that we should be enthusiastic to worship the holy Dham. After all, Rupa Goswami gives us in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 64 devotional activities, five of which are primary, and of those five, one of those is to reside in, which, as I say, means to worship. You reside in a holy place, you worship in that holy place, you take up some service. One friend of mine was just writing me, he said, I'm going to be staying in Vrindavan until May. So I wrote him back, I said, find some daily service, something you can do, some little thing every day, and do that service. Execute that service to the Dham. We see this was the instruction given to all of our previous acharyas. If we look at Shamananda Pandit, or we look at Narottam Das Thakur, each day they had some particular seva to the Dham they were given. And this seva to the Dham is how they develop the proper mood of understanding the holy place of the Lord, how they develop a realization of the Lord's pastimes, and more importantly, how they understood the way to properly serve. And service has to be there to one's guru, to one's God brothers, God sisters, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to the Holy Dham. Our entire life is made of service. So this going to all the different holy places is a way of that worship, of that service. And it alleviates us from so many things that we're carrying around from us. And we see that all the great acharyas have done this. Madhvacharya, South India, but he went all the way to Badrinath, stopping at all the holy places along the way. Nityananda Prabhu, he left home at the age of 11 and traveled and went to all the different holy places until in conclusion he met Madhavendra Puri in Vrindavan at Govardhan. Very nice meeting there. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he did complete a pilgrimage to all the different holy places like that. And of course our ISKCON Padayatri did the same thing, starting and going to all the holy places throughout India. Sometimes this is called Char Dham Yatra. And Char Dham Yatra can refer to two different fours. One Char Dham Yatra means just in Himalayas, to go to Badrinath, Kedarnath, Gangotri, and Jamunotri, those four holy places. And that's quite a task, because you can either go from the places back down to Rishikesh and then back up like that, which takes a very long time, or you can go over the mountains and go that way. And that takes even longer time because there's no known pass and all. So very nice thing to do. And then also there's what's known as Char Dham Yatra, where every respectable Vaishnava goes to these four main holy places. That would be Badrinath, Dwarka, Puri, and Sri Rangam. So these are different types of pilgrimages that are recommended, that are given. And as devotees, we're always very eager to go to the holy place. In particular, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, following the example of so many of our great acharyas, we're eager to go to Vrindavan. We see that Mahaprabhu went to Vrindavan. He sent the six Goswamis to Vrindavan to culminate their seva to him, to culminate their devotional service, to recover all the, at that time, lost holy places of Vrindavan, and each of the acharyas after that also went and resided in Vrindavan. One of those personalities was Prabhupananda Saraswati, and he wrote a very, very wonderful book called the Vrindavan Mahimamrita. And there are 19 chapters in that book. And from the 17th chapter, which is for some reason one of the more famous ones, I selected 8 verses in glorification of Holy Dhamma Vrindavan that I'd like to read in connection with the idea of Lord Parashuram going and rendering service there, worshipping the Holy Dhamma. Day and night I glorify Vrindavan, which is filled with the wonder of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna's pastimes, the wonder of great sweetness, the ultimate nectar of Lord Hari, the sweetest, most auspiciousness, and a flood of virtues, Anantasesha, Shiva, and a host of others are not able to cross. Think of Vrindavan with love. Roll in its dust. Love it ardently. Please its moving and non-moving residents. Worship the birthplace of Sri Radha. With all your heart, take shelter of Sri Vrindavan, the best of all holy places. Sri Vrindavan is perfect in every way. Blind fools say that there are genuine defects in the place of Vrindavan. Oh, I pray that I may not see those fools at the moment of my death. Are they not the object of everyone's laughter? May my eyes become overwhelmed with ecstasy by seeing the nectar waves of Vrindavan's beauty. May my intelligence drown in the nectar ocean of Vrindavan's glories. May my body become agitated by the swiftly moving currents of ecstatic bliss and thus roll about on the ground of Vrindavan. Falling down like a stick, may I offer my respectful obeisances to all the residents of Vrindavan. How important are the most powerful earthly kings for us? How important are all the demigods and sages? How important are countless material opulences which come and go like the scenery in a dream? I thought that was very nice, because in our dreams so many things are coming and going, but no relevance. How important are even the liberated devotees in the spiritual realm of Vaikuntha for those of us who have made residing Vrindavan our only goal of this life? May Sri Vrindavan, which grants auspiciousness and bliss to all, and which is deeply loved by 2 or 3 great souls, become the mother and protectress of blind me. Those who are very unfortunate, will not take shelter of Vrindavan, where the wonderful, handsome, fair, and dark divine couple enjoys eternal pastimes and plunges their friends into the great ocean of intense bliss. Always hearing and chanting Sri Sri Radha Madhava's glories, describing them to others, reflecting on them with your equals, again and again decorating the forest groves, and great love making you ignore this material body, O friend, please reside in Vrindavan. So this is a nice mood that Prabhupada Saraswati has given in this idea of worshiping the Holy Dhamma. So we continue on, verse number 2. Once when Renuka, the wife of Jamadagni, went to the bank of the Ganges to get water, she saw the king of the Gandharvas decorated with a garland of lotuses and sporting in the Ganges with the celestial women, the Apsaras. Verse 3. She had gone to bring water from the Ganges, but when she saw Chitrata, the king of the Gandharvas, sporting with the celestial girls, she was somewhat inclined towards him and failed to remember the time for the fire sacrifice was passing. Number 4. Later, remembering that the time for offering the sacrifice had passed, she feared a curse from her husband. Therefore, when she returned, she simply put the water pot before him and stood there with folded hands. Number 5. The great sage Jamadagni understood the adultery in the mind of his wife. Therefore, he was very angry, and he told his sons, "My dear sons, kill this sinful woman." But the sons did not carry out his order. So I had some thoughts that I wanted to discuss on these 4 particular verses here. First thing that came to my mind was these 4 verses are very clear indications of how completely fortunate we all are to be living in the age of Kali Yuga. Because in the age of Kali Yuga, we are not held responsible for the thoughts of the mind. Here we see in this previous age, the mere thoughts get one into great trouble. I was thinking, whew, If I was accountable for the thoughts that run through my pitiful brain throughout the course of a day, it's embarrassing, it's horrible, and well, it's uplifting, but not very often. So when Renuka went to gather, you know, she's a very dutiful Brahmin wife. She went to the Ganges to gather some water for the jagga that was taking place. So when she went there, she saw this Gandharva. Now, this particular Gandharva, Chittaratha, he has a long history. We find many places throughout the Bhagavatam, because, you know, the Gandharva's lifespan is much different than ours here. So we find many places in the Bhagavatam where he appears along with his girlfriends, the apsaras, to have fun. And it's always in a scenario where it's really not welcome. There's a couple of instances in the Mahabharata, but here he's engaged in this way, and Renuka goes, and so she happens to see him there. And I think it's fair to conclude that he probably encouraged her enticement, her enchantment by him. And you know, she looked upon this scenario, and as my daughter might say, oh, what a cutie. And her mind became attracted in that way. So she began to think, you know, in a way outside of her normal frame as a chaste and devoted wife. Now, it doesn't indicate how long, but it does indicate that she became inclined in this way and thought like this for a long enough period of time that the time passed that the jagga was to be performed. The verse says, failed to remember the time. So this kind of seems to indicate that, you know, she lingered for a while and maybe observed the activities of the Gandharva and the apsaras, you know, they're enjoying like that, you know, and as a result, she was late. Now, this brings another point into play about the difference between this time period that this is taking place and our Kali Yuga. The jagga that is being performed, the different types of sacrifices were time-bound. They had a very specific point at which they had to be executed. Such and such time, they started, not necessarily time by our watch, of course, but by a particular astrological calculation, things had to begin, and by a particular movement of that astrological calculation, they had to be finished. Everything was very specific, okay, starting this way, finish that way, like that. So nowadays, of course, you know, any time, any place, juggas go on in so many different scenarios and so many different circumstances, but the most important principle of the modern juggas is the presence of the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we're very fortunate to be members of and part of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's army in this Kali Yuga, because we're delivered from the confines of these very, very strict rules and regulations that even the slightest deviation can cause great difficulty for a person. As I say, a very chaste Brahmin wife, she's gone to get some water for her husband's jagga, she becomes sidetracked, she gets enamored, loses track of time, comes back and realizes, you know, well. The interesting thing here also about this loss of time, if you would say, you know, sometimes, oh, I lost track of time. Where have you been? We had an appointment at 1 o'clock. The meeting started at 1 o'clock. Those of us that have had responsibilities in different committees or management groups or whatever, you know, you like to start meetings on time. You know, you've always got three or four people that straggle in late. Come on, we started a half hour ago. Where have you been? Oh, I lost track of time. All right, anyway, well, here, let's get going. So that happens. Oh, I lost track of time. What does that mean, losing track of time? Well, in Renuka's particular case, what it basically means is that the mind and senses took over control instead of the intelligence. Intelligence knows, okay, I have to be at such and such place for a meeting at 6 o'clock. We're going to discuss some very important things about this and that and so on like that. Intelligence knows, okay, I have to go and get this water for my husband. He's about to perform the jagga. I need to be back on time. This is the intelligence guiding the activity of the living entity, as we know from Bhagavad Gita. But what happens is that when the mind and the senses take control and replace the guidance of the intelligence, then we lose track of time. lose track of time means I became absorbed in my senses. I became absorbed in the activities of the mind. And they act in a very uncontrolled way. And then we will be distracted from our goal in devotional service. We may not be accountable in this age for the thoughts of the mind, but we can know for a fact that the thoughts of our mind will impact the execution of our devotional service. We've all had that experience. When we're very nicely in control of the mind and senses and executing things very well, our devotional service is running very smooth. But when the mind is very agitated and very disturbed, it's sometimes difficult to execute our devotional service. So it's important to have this principle, even though we're in the age of Kali where we're not held accountable, to have this principle. There's the description of thinking, feeling, and willing. And that by these three, step by step, gradually one becomes implicated. So what do they basically mean? Thinking means basically to contemplate. To contemplate the objects of the senses, as the second chapter of the Gita describes. And then by that contemplation comes the feeling. What does feeling mean? It means to make an arrangement for that contemplation. And then willing. And what does willing mean? It means to act on. So if we contemplate and then begin to make an arrangement, we will eventually act on that desire. So therefore, there is, even though we're in Kali Yuga, some necessity for controlling the mind, for controlling the senses. This is, after all, the ABCs, as Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita. It must be mind control. I remember back in, this was the mid-70s when there was that big trial. I was living in New York at the time, and there was that big trial of brainwashing. One devotee had joined, one young girl had joined, and her parents filed a lawsuit against ISKCON that we were brainwashing. So when Prabhupada came to know, they were making regular reports to Prabhupada what was going on in court each day. Prabhupada said, brainwashing? Yes. Yes, the brain needs to be washed. So that was Prabhupada. So in this way, Renuka became late. So when she returns, this I found interesting too, because each of us have this tendency, right? When we come late to that meeting, oh, you know, I'm sorry, you know, there was traffic and there was somebody really slow, and, you know, I had a flat tire and my dog got sick and the kid drew, you know, whatever. You know, we've got all these excuses. Renuka comes and she realizes, I've made a mistake here. I'm late. So she simply put the water pot before her husband and stood there. Folded her hands. Okay, whatever's going to happen, let that happen. This is actually a very nice example for us as devotees. We have, from not only this birth, from all our previous births, so much baggage in the form of reactions to sinful activities that we are carrying around with us. And we are always coming up with an excuse why we should not have to be accountable for that. Why I shouldn't have to suffer. Why I shouldn't have to deal with that. But Renuka is a very nice example. She knew she had made some mistakes, so she came and very humbly folded her hands. What was that? Tata iti. Tata iti. Let what will happen, happen. So this should be the humble mood of a devotee, that whatever is going to happen. So, and then what happens is Jamadagni says, all right, turns to the sons and says, kill your mother. She is a sinful woman. She has committed adultery. Pretty serious. Of course, the sons were very soft-hearted, and they declined. They said, no, I think we'll pass on that. Thank you very much, Father. I don't really want to do that. Now, you know, as with any father, he assumed, okay, my sons will execute my wishes. You know, one of them at least will carry out my order. So, but they were just too soft-hearted. They couldn't actually commit this act of killing their mother. Now, just a little side note here. Before we get all alarmed and up and, oh my God, how could this is in the Bhagavatam, people killing their mothers and cursing their wives, you know, let us not forget that this isn't exceptional just to the Bhagavatam. Those of you that come from the same background I do remember the story of Abraham being told by God, okay, kill your son Isaac. You know, so all the different scriptures, they have these kinds of tests. So we have to look at what the result is and not just take part of the scene. If you go to watch a play, you don't look at one scene and say, oh, this play's useless. No, you look at the entire production and then say, oh, maybe that was, but you know, the rest of it was carried very well. So in the same way, we don't want to extract just this one particular little spot here. We want to look at the whole thing. So what is going on here? Jaman Jagni realizes the sons are not going to listen, so he turns to Parashuram. He says, no, please, not only kill your mother, but kill your sons, your brothers too, because they didn't listen. That's pretty serious, you know? Hate to be a teenager in that family. So Jaman Jagni says to Parashuram, do like this. Now, Prabhupada notes a very important word in this verse here. Actually, I got one verse ahead of myself. Let me read text number 6. This is where he requests this. Text number 6. Jamadagni then ordered his youngest son, Parashuram, to kill his brothers who had disobeyed this order and his mother who had mentally committed adultery. Lord Parashuram, knowing the power of his father, who has practiced in meditation and austerity, both of which give great result, killed his father and brothers immediately. Poor Parashila Prabhupada. The word Prabhabhagyan is significant. Parashuram knew the prowess of his father, and therefore he agreed to carry out the father's order. He thought that if he refused to carry out the order, his father would curse him, but that if he carried out the order of his father, he would be pleased. And when the father was pleased, Parashuram would ask the benediction of having his mothers and brothers brought back to life. Parashuram was confident in this regards, and therefore he agreed to kill his mothers and brothers. So, Prabhupada uses this word, emphasizes this word, prabhava gyan. So, this is indicative of the intelligence of Parashuram. He knew that his father could also curse him to be punished or killed or whatever because of his father's great prowess. His father had been performing meditation and austerity and sacrifice for so long, and he had gained great result of that activity, which any of us do. Anybody, you perform Ekadasi Vrata, you know, what to speak of those of us who have been chanting 16 rounds and following regular principles, going to Mangalarti forever. All of these things accumulate in reciprocal advancement in devotional service. What to speak of these kind of serious, serious austerities. So Parashuram thought, if I don't do this, my father's going to kill me too. He's going to kill a whole lot of us, or curses or something. So, but my father is so powerful, so strong, that I'll go ahead and do it, and then I'll ask him for the benediction, because everyone knows sages give benedictions. You perform some service for a sage. There's just endless stories. How Radharani got the blessing to cook so nicely by pleasing Durvasa Muni. Everything you cook will be as sweet. You know, like that. So sages give benediction. You please a sage, they give a benediction. So all right, so I'll please my father, then I will ask the benediction. So he knew how to work this, you know. Now, there's another significant thing here. Prabhupada finishes this purport with this sentence. Parashuram was confident in this regard. This indicates that Parashuram had the ability to wholeheartedly, with full conviction, execute this activity that he was being asked of him by his father. Now, isn't this how we're supposed to execute our devotional service? Wholeheartedly, with confidence and full conviction. This is how we should go about our daily service to Guru and Krishna. We have to have that confidence that what we're doing is going to bring about the result. And it's just like Krishna concludes in the Gita. He says, armed with yoga, now stand and fight. In other words, you've got the knowledge, now go forward. Act on that knowledge. Gyan and vigyan, knowledge, but then the practical application of that knowledge. So this is a very clear point that Parashuram has confidence that by executing this activity, that by endeavoring in this way, the result will come. So he moves ahead. So, sure enough, he does the deed, if you will. He kills his brothers, kills his mother. And just as we can imagine, the anger of Jamadagni is now placated. He's pacified, and his kind nature comes out again. Oh, my dear son, Ask any benediction to me you like. You did such a nice service. Now ask whatever you want. And this is when, as you might say in certain circles, where Parshuram pulls out his trump card, his get out of jail free card. He says, well, actually, and not only does he call it, but with that full confidence that it's going to be rewarded, right? Just like sometimes you've seen in some type of game of chance, if someone's got exactly what they know is going to win, they put that hand down with such confidence. You saw in the dice game with Sukuni and the Pandavas. Whenever Sukuni would throw the dice, such confidence he threw it. And he would say, now I've won that. Very proud like that. So in the same way, not with the pride, but Parshuram very confidently plays his card now. My dear father, please give life back to my mother and to my brothers. So here again, we see how devotional service should be executed with full confidence in the result. And this full confidence in the result comes from three things. We gain that confidence by sadhu, shastra, and guru. By hearing from our spiritual master, we gain confidence that the path we're pursuing will yield its result. By reading the shastra, we gain conviction that what my spiritual master is saying is in the shastra. Therefore, I will gain that result. And by associating with the sadhus, with the other saintly persons, we gain the ability to appreciate all of that and then put it into action. So we have to have the same kind of confidence. And just like Parshuram knew his father's mood, he knew his father's nature, he knew how his father was going to act, so much so that he could understand what the next result would be. In the same way, we have to know the philosophy of Krishna consciousness so that we can have full confidence in the results of our daily devotional service. And then sure enough, what happens in verse 8? Thereafter, by the benediction of Jamadagni, Lord Parashurama's mother and brothers immediately came alive and were very happy, as if awakened from a sound sleep. Lord Parashuram had killed his relatives in accordance with his father's order because he was fully aware of his father's power, austerity, and learning. So Parashuram, of course, is the incarnation of the personality of Godhead, but in this pastime he understood, act like this, this result will come. And if we look at this in a deeper sense, we can see that this is actually not about somebody killing their relatives, but it's about understanding how to go about executing our devotional service, the type of conviction, the type of confidence in the result that we have to develop in the process of devotional service. Now, there's one underlying principle to this section of the Bhagavatam that I think is really important, because basically it's the difference between Kshatriyas and Brahmanas. That's what's being given to us here. The difference in these stories is, you know, it's different than what we're accustomed to. It's not the type of behavior that we as Gaudiya Vaishnavas train ourselves to develop, that we hear that our acharyas have developed, this, the external appearance of this pastime. Because these are the activities of Kshatriyas. And I did just a little quick comparison here, the differences. For instance, Kshatriyas are very easily angered. Brahmins, they're very tolerant. Kshatriyas are very proud. Brahmanas are very humble. Kshatriyas, they're motivated by their senses and by their desire to dominate. Brahmanas, they control the senses. They don't want to own anything. Kshatriyas, they hold a grudge. So many cases, this is a perfect example, we see that there's some grudge being held. And a Brahmana, he is forgiven. Always very forgiving in his mood. Anybody think of any other comparisons like that? Differences between Kshatriyas and Brahmins? Anybody? Okay. Anyway, these are just some of them. So this whole story is really just a back and forth. You know, you did this to me, I'm going to do this to you. You did this to my father and my brothers, I'm going to do this to your father and your brothers. So just back and forth. And this is all what Prahlad Maharaj talks about in the seventh canto, of seeing things in regards to friends and enemies instead of seeing everyone as spirit soul. So And if we look at this section here, it all begins with Kartavirya Arjuna. I mean, what a proud. Now, of course, you know, some might say due reason to be proud. I mean, after all, he captured Ravana. And we'll get to that point. I'm prepared for your argument. So, Kartavirya Arjuna, you know, I mean, he captured Ravana. So then, of course, he's going to think, what's a Brahmin and his cows? You know, if I can capture Ravana, what have I got to worry about a Brahmin and his cows for? So, in this way, the whole mess begins because of the offense to a Brahmana. So, my conclusion is simply that we have to be very, very cautious, very thoughtful, and very attentive in our dealings with Brahmanas, and be very cautious not to commit any offenses. So, that's my 2 cents. We'll finish there. Pushkar's got his hand up and ready to go, so. Hey, I didn't write the Bhagavatam, I'm just reading it. They interjected in there just to continue the line of, doubtful. It's interjected, the question was, because the question was, what is the relationship of Renuka forgetting to be on time with the water and her being cursed have to do with the overall story? Right. I think it just shows the nature of Kshatriyas, and because we're building up to Parshuram killing off all the Kshatriyas, you know, like that. Now, you raised the question in the middle of that, wait a minute, wasn't Janajagni a Brahmin? But if we review the story back, actually he was supposed to be a Kshatriya. But the nectars got switched up. So there's a little mixed family line there. You know, so that's my answer to that. What's that? Chivakam Prabhu.
Jamaragni is one of the Saptarishi. He, Vashishta, Vishamitra, Atri, and you know, there's a few others.
Well, that's their duty. Mm-hmm. Their brahminical responsibilities are a little different in that age than ours are in this age, certainly. Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know.
And like I say, even Vishramrita, you look, there's a little mixing of the Kshatriya line in both of those personalities, which we'll see later in the Bhagavatam, of course, also.
Yeah.
Anyone else? No? Successful. On time. Thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. All glories to Radhe Shyam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.